This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Help! I need somebody.
Help!
Not just anybody.
Help!
You know I need someone.
Help!
When I was young, was so much younger than today.
I never needed
anybody's help in any way.
Now
these days are gone,
days
I'm
gone.
Not so self-assured. Change my mind and open up the doors. Help me if you can, I'm feeling down. And I do appreciate you being round. Help me get my feet back on the ground. Won't you please, please help me?
Oh yeah, that's Nancy Pelosi crying for help, I think. Did you guys watch that speech last night? And by the way, were all the Democratic women dressed in white? And does that stand for purity? These are just questions that we have here on Freedom Works. Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, and along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us on this Wednesday morning, the day after. It seems like we had a nuclear explosion last night. On the cusp of Donald Trump's acquittal, we're going to be talking in a couple of minutes with Jim Antle of the American Conservative on what he believes is an impeachment built for cable news and hawkish purposes, as in war hawkish purposes. So stay tuned for that. And Trump wows them last night in D.C. with his State of the Union speech, while Nancy Pelosi hovers behind him like she's sitting in a dentist chair. We're going to get the take on the speech from the guy who totes the country's most accurate poll, the Barber poll, Andrew Cerasi. Got to stay tuned for that. And two major Democratic strategists are warning of storm clouds for the Dems in November. Wait till you hear what they had to say. We'll talk about that. And what would Ayn Rand, remember her, the famous woman objectivist? She wrote Atlas Shrugged and a whole bunch of others. What would she think of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren if she were around today? We're going to get a hint of that from a member of the Ayn Rand Institute. And, you know, speaking about presidents and Trump, and in our ultimate top 10, the top 10 shortest presidents, shortest presidents. Do you think you know who it is, number one? Let's find out. By the way, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop for the best haircut in Tampa Bay. You men, you got to get over to Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin. It's located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 on Overcash Drive. I'm telling you, you get in there, you're going to get the best haircut at the best price, great environment. They talk politics, let me warn you. They love Donald Trump. It's a great place. I always, every time I get there, I not only get a great haircut, I get a great conversation. So make sure you get over there. And don't forget to visit the website. You want to know who we are going to have in the upcoming weeks, etc. Next show, OurFreedomWorks.com. O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com. Big Ed sets up all of our programs on podcasts, so you can go there, listen to any of our shows at your leisure. So get over there, OurFreedomWorks.com. Wow, I don't know where to start. We have three big stories going on right now. We have the State of the Union speech delivered by Donald Trump last night. And I'll tell you what, I think he did a pretty good job. We're going to talk more about that. Then we had the entire Iowa caucus machinery falling apart for Democrats. And by the way, did you hear that stuff that they use that, and maybe Ed knows more about it than I do, but they use some sort of a technological thing that they introduced into the caucuses. And I understand that the machinery for that had something to do with Hillary Clinton. And as in, she was connected to the company that sold.
She deleted the wrong files.
Yeah. So the data got all screwed up over there. And you feel bad for the Iowa residents that braved the cold to go to those caucuses.
Yeah.
And what happened? They're left in the cold. We still don't know the ultimate. I guess Pete Buttigieg really came through. He was looking pretty good. And Bernie Sanders.
What was his name?
Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, I thought it was Butt Gig.
Well, I call him Mayor Booty.
Okay, whatever.
I think it's easier to say Mayor Booty, but I think people would be confused. So I say Mayor Pete. We can call him Mayor Pete. But if you want to call him Butt Gig, you can call him that.
Just call him Loser.
So Bernie Sanders and Mayor Pete did very well. Very, very right. well. Now, the third thing we got going is today, and it's almost lost in the shuffle because nobody really thinks there's going to be any surprise. We have the actual impeachment vote in the Senate. And the only question is, at this point, the only intrigue is whether or not there will be any Republicans voting to convict and whether there will be any Democrats voting to acquit. So they are actually probably in Las Vegas making book. The only guy in the Republican Party that will vote to convict, and I don't think he will, is Mitt Romney. Because he cannot go back to Utah. No matter what he said before about Donald Trump, who he does not like, he cannot go back to Utah and get reelected if he votes to convict.
You know, he's
Utah's too Republican.
He's
that
a
way.
Very angry individual right now. And there's another angry individual that's a female that maybe they should shack up together and just be angry. You know I'm talking about this one?
Yes, I know who you're talking about. We all know. Every time you say angry female, it's the lady that ripped up the speech. By the way, I'm looking at the... yes. Very good. We ought to make a soundtrack of
she
that.
She looked like she was ripping up her divorce.
She probably did.
And, you know, when... I don't know if... I guess Trump didn't see it, but I thought she was on the edge. She was so frustrated she couldn't say anything. That sounds familiar. Going back to the, you know, the whole impeachment thing, the Republicans couldn't say anything. She looked so angry. If he'd have turned to her and said something like, class act, Nancy, as usual, I think he'd have pushed her over the edge and she'd have done something even dumber.
Well, she might have jumped off of that dais and got hurt.
She might have taken a swing at him or something.
Yeah.
I mean, she'd have missed, but...
And then her teeth would fall out.
Yeah. Oh, and I took notes last night, by the way. It was 13 minutes in before the teeth let loose.
Yeah.
And who was she mouthing to?
I saw that. She was turning and looking at somebody as if to chastise
them.
Yeah,
no, she was trying to talk to them. Can you imagine trying to read her lips?
It looked like she was chastising them.
She was trying to... Can you imagine trying to read her lips? I mean, her lips go one way and her teeth go the other way. There's no way you could read... No way.
You know, you're pretty funny when you want to be. I must admit.
I almost called you last night and said, you know what, let's just go on the air now.
I mean,
by the time we cover all this stuff.
It was a complete show. And we're going to talk about how, and you got to give Donald Trump, he is a master at I don't want to use the word manipulation. That becomes a pejorative. He is a master at presentation, and he did a wonderful presentation.
The whole thing with bringing the guy
Rush
home.
Rush Limbaugh, yeah. The Marine coming home or yeah. whatever from Afghanistan. That beautiful little black girl that gets to go to a school based on school choice.
Right.
And the woman whose child, I think it was a 2-year-old girl, mm-hmm. survived the premature because of all of the technological. He did it in such a way. I thought it was very, very hard to criticize them other than the Democrats sitting on their hands. I mean, angry and not compassionate. And I think he orchestrated this in such a way to bring that out.
I didn't understand the women dressed in white. Was it Gandhi night?
That's a very good question.
What was the...
Unless they were getting behind Tulsi Gabbard, because do you notice that Tulsi Gabbard, who nobody gives any chance to, of becoming the nominee for the Democrats for president, she always wears white. But Nancy wore white. Actually, it was a nice looking outfit. I'll give Nancy Pelosi credit. I thought she looked pretty good in it. But other than that, she looked like she was sitting in a dentist chair. I mean, did you notice? She had to sit there in a... And just, she had to, she almost had that, what do you call it, a sardonic smile on her
and
face.
And she was following along in the speech. And then when Trump would say, we did this, we did this, she would like go back and look at it like, wow, he did that? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it looked like she was trying to find her place again in the speech.
And then a couple of times, she didn't like that he took credit. She started clapping for the new Mexican deal because she feels she had a hand in that by,
that's right,
by crossing the one T and dotting the one I. So she felt she
but
was
Donald
part
Trump
of
made sure to give himself total credit for it. Good. All right, we're going to take our break. And when we come back, Jim Antle will join us. Stay tuned.
There's a reason for the sunshine sky. And there's a reason.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Wednesday morning, the day after the State of the Union speech and the day of, finally, the impeachment vote, and delighted to welcome Jim Antle. He is editor-in-chief of The American Conservative. And Jim's got quite a pedigree. He also had served as managing editor of The Daily Caller and associate editor of The American Spectator. Jim, welcome to Freedom Works.
It's great to be here.
Great to have you. And you wrote a piece a while back, Jim, about what you called a hawkish impeachment. This is a constitutional crisis built for cable news. And you talked about, it details the major inconsistencies when it comes to hawkish government on both sides of the aisle. Could you kind of elaborate on what you were talking about there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, given that impeachment now seems like it's fading into distant memory,
yes.
But the Democrats, you know, who spent much of the Cold War downplaying the Soviet threat when it was a much more significant threat than Russia is today, are now really up in arms about Russia. And they built a lot of their impeachment case around the fact that we need to be giving weapons to Ukraine so we don't have to fight the Russians over here. And it's not clear whether they really believe that or if this is a convenient cudgel with which to beat President Trump. But it's very interesting that we have a Congress that has essentially ceded its power over matters of war and peace to the executive branch, yet And it is willing to let presidents essentially decide on their own whether to overthrow foreign leaders, but they're going to say we can't trust our current president to even conduct a telephone call with a foreign leader, and we need to impeach him on the basis of any of these conversations being a great threat to our national security and some ill-defined type of election interference. There seems to be a little bit of an inconsistency there, to not be limiting the war powers of the president, but then to be impeaching him over telephone calls.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And we've talked on this show before about this War Powers Act and the fact that Congress really has the sole authority to declare war. But we've kind of tossed that aside. And we never declared war after World War II. That's the last time we declared war. And that's the last war. Right. That's the last real war we won.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Something's wrong.
A connection there.
Yeah. Something's wrong. We lost the. I mean, Korea's still going on, right? It's a peace ceasefire. We lost the Vietnam War, and all of the other wars. I mean, it just sort of faded away without any kind of. I mean, it's just you begin to wonder. You begin to wonder why Congress did exactly what they did, and maybe it's unconstitutional.
Well, it's definitely unconstitutional. It's a clear-cut violation of Article 1, but Congress has decided that it's better to safeguard their own political interests than to safeguard their constitutional prerogatives. So, politically speaking, it's less risky for them to just let the president decide what to do militarily, and then afterwards, if things start going badly, then to nitpick, critique, and try to micromanage what's going on, which actually gets the constitutional order of things completely backwards.
Yeah, and also it takes away their responsibility, so they can't be blamed. I mean, it's the worst.
Right.
It's the worst scenario. I mean, they should be the ones that are responsible, because if we really did declare war, then you think that we would really, we would win it. We would go there to win because a war was declared. Now it's like, well, we'll go over there and try and keep the. It's more like we'll go over there and try and keep the peace. So we go over there and try and keep the peace. In the meantime, our soldiers are getting blown up.
Right.
Trying
exactly.
to keep the peace.
The congressional votes, the declarations of war reflect the idea that there is a broad consensus that a war is necessary and needs to be fought. And when you don't have that consensus, but you send troops overseas anyway, it leads to a lot of inertia, it leads to a lot of half measures, it leads to a lot of confusion about what we're doing. And I don't think it's merely a coincidence that when we stopped declaring wars, we stopped winning wars.
I think you're right. We're talking with Jim Antle. He is the editor-in-chief of the American Conservative, and we're talking a little bit about sort of the whole strange impeachment imbroglio, as it reflects what Congress tries to do and doesn't do when it comes to things overseas. Now, we got, Jim, like you said, the Democrats are all up in arms about Ukraine. When did they ever care about Ukraine before? And what did they didn't seem to care that much when Putin from Russia went over and snatched the Crimean Peninsula portion of Ukraine. Everything, did you hear much screaming and jumping up and down from the Democrats?
No, and giving this kind of lethal aid to Ukraine wasn't even the policy of the U.S. government when they were in control of it under Barack Obama. And this wasn't something that the Democrats wanted to do when they had the power to do so. So, you know, it's really interesting that they've built their entire impeachment case around the absolute necessity of doing something that they themselves didn't do.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. So now we're on the cusp of the acquittal.
Right.
Let me ask you just straight out. You're a conservative. Donald Trump is not, in my way of looking at things, I don't think he's technically a purebred conservative. He is a mix.
Right.
He's a mix. He's a populist. He's got some conservative things that he espouses. But then I'll hear where he wants the government to become involved, for instance, in things like parental leave and, you know, the and health insurance. And I know if you're like me, I go, and I'm somewhat libertarian, I go, I don't want the federal government in parental leave, and I don't want them in my health care. I want those things in the free market, right? So he steps back and forth over that line. But by doing so, he's dragged a lot of blue-collar Democrats his way, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, Trump's not a small government guy. That's certainly true. He never has been, and we're paying the price for that to a certain extent with trillion-dollar deficits coming back in a time of economic growth. But there has been a political upside to his approach in that the voters that he has activated live in the right states to give you an electoral college majority. So we hadn't won on the Republican side, states like Michigan and Wisconsin and even Pennsylvania at the presidential level since Ronald Reagan was in office. And Trump punctured that blue wall with an appeal to blue-collar voters, with an appeal to working-class whites. That appeal might grow even stronger this year, depending on who the Democrats in their messy process decide to nominate. And, you know, that's been the political upside to it. So, you know, clearly he's appealed to some people on the basis of not being a rigorous free market and philosophically small government, limited government guy, which from a constitutional perspective I have some problems with. But you can't argue with some of the political successes. And, you know, we wouldn't have the judges and we wouldn't have some of the other positive things that the Trump administration has done if he had not been able to win over those voters in places like Michigan.
Right. And he's also, he's a fiscal conservative. I mean, basically, he might be a bit of a social liberal on certain things, but he's a fiscal, you know, coming with a business background. Look at the unemployment rate. Look at the lowering of the taxes, which he was totally for.
Yeah.
It's working. Look at, he's even turning some, he's turning a lot of blue-collar Democrats over his way, I think. A lot of union people. A lot of union people, not the teachers' union, but the
right.
But the other unions are going, not maybe not the leaders.
Not the leaders, but
the members.
Certainly the rank and file.
The rank and file.
Yeah.
And even a lot of African-Americans. I'm hearing African-Americans saying good things about him with the unemployment rate, right?
Well, and you have the lowest African-American unemployment rate in history, lowest unemployment rate for young African-American workers as well, which has historically been a very high unemployment rate. I think that Trump is going to make a real pitch to black voters in the 2020 campaign. You know, he doesn't need to win that demographic, but to get, you know, 15% or 20% of the African-American vote really makes it very difficult for the Democrats to win. Even if you just cut into the margins at that level, and also you don't have the same level of turnout that was the case under the two elections Barack Obama ran in, you know, that really gives Republicans an edge if they can even just win over fairly modest numbers of black voters.
So let's project something here, Jim, finally. If Trump were to win in November,
right,
what should his military philosophy be? I don't know, kind of as it comes to the situation in Afghanistan in particular, and perhaps the way he would address Russia's, the threat of Russia. Should he take a particular stand in, to your way of thinking as a conservative?
You know, I think the good thing that Trump has done in foreign policy and militarily is that he has shifted the emphasis away from regime change wars to limiting our actions to focusing on the types of terrorists who would attack Americans. So we've been bombing ISIS and we've been depriving ISIS of territory, but we've not gone into new countries and overthrown dictators and babysitting new protectorates abroad. So I think that's been a good thing, and I hope he continues that. I do think he ran on the idea of shrinking the American military footprint in the Middle East. And so far, we haven't seen that happen. So I think it would be to the benefit of the country, you know, to stop spending so many resources over there when we're facing a rising China, when we have cybersecurity threats from Russia. I think we need to focus on the real threats and stop micromanaging other countries' civil wars to no obvious benefit to ourselves. So hopefully, in a second term, Trump would follow through on some of those promises.
Do you think he's too attached to Saudi Arabia?
I do. I think that he has leaned too heavily on Saudi Arabia, which I think is a very unreliable ally, clearly a very theocratic regime that's given money to Wahhabism. Now, obviously, anything that would replace the current regime over in Saudi Arabia would be even worse. So I understand the need and the desire to do business with the Saudis. But I think we've gone beyond doing business with the Saudis and sort of turned a blind eye to who they really are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jim, it's been a pleasure talking with you about all of this. Very, very interesting. I hope we can talk again down the road.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. All right. Jim Antle from the American Conservative. There you go. We're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the State of the Union speech with the proprietor of the most accurate poll in America, the Barber Poll.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best hair cutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Don't miss the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. We'll bring you up to speed on craft beer events and festivals, local breweries, and interview the brains behind the brews. So grab a pint and listen to the Craft Beer Hour every Wednesday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network, and visit the website, thecraftbeerhour.com.
Let's Go Bowling, heard on the Tantalk Radio Network every Wednesday, 11 a.m. to 12 Eastern Time. Sponsored by 12 Strike and Innovative Ball Spinner. If you bowl, if you haven't bowled in a while, or if you never bowled, why not you be one of 65 million people have bowled last year? Listen to the tip of the week, bowling stars, old and new. Let's Go Bowling Show, GoBowlingShow.com.
Go yard is a metaphor used in baseball, meaning to hit a home run. Life struggles can make you feel like you just struck out. It's times like these that we need a little batting practice to pick ourselves back up and get back in the game. Whether you are dealing with marital issues, drug addiction, rebellious teens, anxiety, depression, or just generally having a bad day, call Mama Mac. If life has you down 0-2, before you strike out, learn to go yard. Go yard with Mama Mac on this radio station, Thursdays, 6 o'clock.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Wednesday, February the 5th already. Holy Toledo. Boy, everything is going on at the same time. Before we get to the Master Barber, Andrew Ceraci, I want to tell you that new polling by Gallup, probably the most trusted poll in the country, reveals that Trump's approval rating, President Trump, is at an all-time high. At all-time high, he's at 49%. With 94% of the Republicans approving him. 94, you can't get higher. 94%. So, Andrew, did you watch that lovely speech? And I want to, in particular, ask you, did you admire Nancy Pelosi sitting back there chewing on her cud? Whoop, we haven't got him.
Like I told everybody, oh, I said, you know, last night that speech, Donald Trump hit it out of the park, my friend. And all the years I've been around, I never heard a State of the Union speech that good. A couple points gave me tears in my eyes. Look at what he did for the Tuskogee Airmen, man, 100 years old.
Right. And by the way, that guy looked as bright as can be. I couldn't believe he didn't look 100 at all.
No, he stood up on his own and everything.
Yeah.
You know, he brought a point out. He hit everything, Paul. He hit everything. He hit everything so good. He actually put the Democrat Party in the coffin. And when Nancy Pelosi tore up those papers, she closed the lid on it. That's what I feel.
I think he... he orchestrated a State of the Union speech that made Democrats, I mean, I think, he knew what they would do or not do. And by sitting on their hands while some of those moments were going on, you know, with Rush Limbaugh receiving the Medal of Freedom.
That's right. I mean, he outdid himself, believe me.
He really did.
His points went up so high yesterday. I know you're saying 49% approval. You know, when he got elected in 16, I think it was 64 million people voted for him. I believe this time around you're going to see over 100 million.
Wow. You think that?
Yeah, I think that, Paul.
That would be unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You know, well, look at the Democrats now. 52% of the votes are in Iowa. Pete Buttigieg, he's the leader right now. And his husband, he said he's a happily married man. His husband can't wait to get in the White House and be the first gentleman. You know, it's just amazing what's going on today. I mean, even the Super Bowl the other day, you know, not for nothing. Jennifer Lopez is a hell of an entertainer, but I think she could have toned it down a little bit. What's McDonald going to come out with next year? Jennifer Lopez pole dancing for your daughter in her bedroom? I mean, come on. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous. I mean, that's what you're going to see. Mom, I want to be like Jennifer Lopez. Can you get me one of those poles to put in my bedroom, Mommy? That'd be great. You know, come on. Let's be real. Then you got Pete Buttigieg wants to get into the presidency. What is this world coming to? Nancy Pelosi, Turner. The Democrat Party is controlled by Satan, my friend. They're taking God out of this country, and that's what's happening.
Well, I'll tell you what. There seems to be an easily definable difference between people that are backing Donald Trump and people that are backing people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who, by the way, I got to tell you, I just read this. I can't believe she would say this. We were just talking about Rush Limbaugh, who has advanced lung cancer. She says he's a violent racist, and his receiving the Presidential Medal of Freedom cheapens its value. What a time for her to say something like that.
Well, they're history, Paul. I believe they're all gone, Paul. Yeah. You're going to see, I think, the Republicans landslide the House, the Senate, and the presidency.
Two people that agree with you are Democratic strategists. You know, you remember James Carville?
James Carville
from New Orleans, right. Democratic strategist. He's married to Mary Matlin, who's a conservative woman, but he's a liberal. Well, he is expressing his concerns that the Dems, he says he's scared to death of the direction their party is going. He was on MSNBC, and he said, I'm 75 years old. Why am I here doing this? Because I'm scared to death. He said, let's get relevant here. All the Sanders people are taking pictures wishing Jeremy Corbyn the best. I don't want to go down that path.
Well, you know something? The last good Democrat there was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, okay? And if Kennedy was alive today, he would be a Republican. That's why they shot him, Paul, because of his beliefs and the way they were. He was pro-American.
I tend to think you're right about his being a Republican. In fact, a lot of union workers are turning Republican. At least under Donald Trump, they're going to be Republican.
How could they not, Paul? They're all making money now. Okay? They're not scraping the bottom of the barrel. You know, Nancy Pelosi was twisting her dentures last night because everything Trump said is happening. Okay? And it's like you said, the past administration did not do crap, and the one before that didn't do crap.
Another Democratic strategist I wanted to bring up was Van Jones. He's on CNN, and he warned his fellow Democrats on the panel while this whole thing is going on that Trump is helping African Americans.
That's right.
He said, Trump is helping African Americans in real life and reaching out to them for their vote. And he's right. And Van Jones is a black man. And,
that's right.
So if people like Van Jones and James Carville are seeing what they perceive to be the correct writing on the wall, I think you're right about the monsoon that might be coming in November.
It's a tsunami, buddy, a tsunami.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not a tsunami.
Well, wait.
It is going to be a 50-foot wave, my friend.
I thought.
And you know, it just gets me. Did you see Nancy Pelosi last night when Donald Trump says he's going to put it back in where it's okay for prayer in the government schools? Nancy Pelosi almost had a heart attack. She grabbed her chest.
Yeah, exactly. I think, as we said, it looked like she was sitting in a dentist chair. They might as well have been giving her Novocaine. They might as well have been administering Novocaine because she was squirming around and she had a sardonic smile. But then again, she has that locked-in smile, and then I think her dentures force her lips not to be able to come out of the smile.
They're twisting to one side.
It's very, very...
It's looking like she was having a stroke.
Why are we so cruel to her? Now, what about this impeachment? Now, we got
I think Trump should rip up the papers at 4 o'clock when he's acquitted. What do you think of that one?
I think it's pretty good. I think you're right.
Yep. And just like everybody says... Oh, Nancy Pelosi held her hand out to shake. And let me tell you something. She got a pair of coyotes to sit there and hold her hand out. She has tried to destroy him, destroy his family for the last 3 years. She's put this whole thing, the whole administration through hell. And she holds her hand out? You got to be kidding me. I would have turned my back on her so fast it was unbelievable.
Well, he did. But, you know, I'm just thinking, you visualize this. We could go back and start over on that one. As she goes to hold out her hand, he pulls her over the table.
Yeah, that would have been beautiful.
Oops.
It would have been beautiful. A couple of visits at the end, you know.
She comes
like
splashing,
saying,
she comes
was,
splashing
she was so
down.
Twisted at the end. He should have said something to her. She would have jumped over that podium to gone after him.
Well, and then he could say, oh, Nancy, are you okay? I'm so sorry. I was just trying to shake your hand. She's laying there.
Yeah, Paul,
she's laying
you
there.
See them all sitting there. Like, they were disgusting. No respect for anything, didn't stand up for certain things. It's terrible. And then did you notice not one of them even has an American flag lapel on? I don't know what she had on, but there was no American flag.
No, you're probably right. You know, but you got to give Donald Trump credit. Now, honestly, he orchestrated this. He has that Marine coming down from Afghanistan to join his wife and child, right? He has
right.
He has the little girl, the little two-year-old girl who survived the premature birth. So that's kind of a nod towards those that are pro-life. Then he has that that young, cute little black girl that's going to get the opportunity
right.
to go to the school.
He
of
hit
her
it. Oh, he hit it on the head. Everything. He nailed it. He got the American. Let me tell you, I had tears a couple of times in my eyes.
Yeah. What about
okay?
Rush? What about Rush Limbaugh and his
phenomenal, phenomenal.
And he has his wife do it. I mean, can you see that he really knows how to, you got to give him credit now.
He
knows how to orchestrate.
Let me tell you, so far this year, that's going to be the best program on television. Believe me, they need to do another one.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you get higher ratings than the Super Bowl, which probably couldn't be hard to do today after their shows.
And Gallup poll, which is probably the most prestigious poll in the country, certainly the longest, has his highest Trump's highest approval rating, 49%, with 94% of Republicans approving of him.
That's right, Paul. I think he's over the 50% mark, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I'm staying around 52%, maybe 53%. He's guaranteed re-election,
and
Paul,
he's going
at
this to
point.
And he's going to get a bump from the State of the Union speech. In other words...
Oh, he's going up from there.
If Gallup were to take that poll, like today...
Oh...
I mean, you might add another 5 points to that.
I'd say there's no question about that.
Yeah.
The guy hit a grand slam. He's showing his for this country. He's the people's president. People need to realize this. Look when he hit the president of Venezuela there, okay, the so-called president, because, you know, there's turmoil going on.
That's
there.
Right.
He said, this is what socialism brings. Ask this man.
Yeah, he got the socialism card into it. And
perfect.
By the way, what do you think of Trump not mentioning the impeachment?
That was total class. Total class. You got to wait till today anyway.
He's going to probably mention that the next time he does one of his rallies.
Of course. You know that.
Well, I'm kind of glad he didn't mention the impeachment. I thought
that
was the right thing to do.
He hit everything where it was supposed to be, Paul. I mean, the guy out of a 10, the guy got a 20 on that speech.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting if we can find out how many people actually tuned into that last night? Because it was on all the networks.
I think a great deal.
And I think anybody that was on the fence about the impeachment and stuff like that, because I never watched that. You know, I can't stand it. But
it must
have
been like me with the Super Bowl.
I was hooked from the beginning. And then all the facial expressions and stuff like that. I even tossed over to CNN as much as I could stand it to see what the reaction was going to be. And, of course, they're going to find some way You know, because they're always like, you know, Donald Trump, he's a bully. Oh, who looked like the bully last night tearing up papers in somebody's face?
He was like a 10-year-old bully.
Who was the bully last night, Nancy?
That's right. Well, Nancy and her whole party, my friend.
In fact, I think, like you just said, Ed, people tuned in because they did kind of want to see how that relationship at the very start with Nancy Pelosi and Trump, who cannot stand each other. I mean, what would you do if somebody was trying to throw you out of office?
Sure.
Would you shake her hand?
It would have been a
I don't blame him for not shaking her hand.
It would have been a perfect opportunity for him to use that as his own platform, which the Democrats have done. No matter what the subject is, they would use it for their own platform. He could have stood up there and said a lot of things about the impeachment, but he stayed away from it. He said, listen, he knows it's BS. Let it take care of itself. I'm more concerned about the country.
And I think that's right. He proved every point of it. There's no question about it.
So I take it we all like the speech. Am I right?
I'd watch it again.
Andrew, by the way, he's the master barber and the best haircutter in Tampa Bay. But did you watch the Democratic response from the governor of Michigan?
I was throwing tomatoes at my television.
Well, wait a second. Know? Wasn't that as equally exciting?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
would she just stay in the...
I thought about the guy filling the pothole. How come she didn't get it done?
Oh, yeah. It was started out with potholes.
Wasn't that
the Detroit Lions.
Wasn't that about the weakest response?
She should just stay in the restaurant and serve my wings the way I like them.
Uh-oh.
That's right. No question about it.
I almost felt sorry for her because of the, you know, the grandiosity of the Trump speech. And there she is standing... And it was a rather quiet little thing. And she's talking about potholes. And I'm thinking, first of all, and then she mentions the impeachment. And it's like there was no relevance to the speech. No relevance.
No, that's the best they got, Paul. What do you think of that?
It's kind of scary for them.
Yeah, they're done. I told you. The coffin has been closed. Now we're just waiting to lower it in the ground. We've got about another 265 days or something.
Exactly right. It's coming close. It's coming soon. And as always, Andrew, it is such a pleasure to talk with you. We could go on and on with this, but I'm going to let you get back to your barber chair. And looking forward to talking with you on Friday after the acquittal.
You got it, buddy. If you want to stop today, you're welcome.
Okay, my friend. Thank you so
much. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. There he goes. Oh, my goodness.
I told you we should have started last night.
We should have, because we'd be talking now. I mean, you know, I'll be honest with you. Anybody that's doing any kind of talk radio show these days has got so much material. You don't even have to worry about it. You're never going to run out. With Donald Trump in the office and with this impeachment and with the, not the State of the Union, but the primaries that are going on now, there's so much to talk about.
Since the impeachment thing will be over this week.
Hopefully
maybe Monday you should have Angela come in and, or Andrew rather, come in and sit in for the whole show.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
Just sit and chat with them about it. Yeah, you're so right about that. Because I think back to way back when didn't even know Donald Trump's political motives. And there was Andrew going, I think this guy could be president. Anyway, we're going to take our final break. And when we come back, among other things, do you know who the shortest president was? We're going to tell you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
The best barbershop in Tampa Bay, Andrew's Master Barbershop, located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. They've got a beautiful new facility, but you'll still get the very best haircut from the very best haircutters, and for a great price, too. Andrew's Master Barbershop is open Tuesday through Friday, 8:30 to 5, and Saturday, 8:30 to 2 p.m. Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza, State Road 580 and Overcash Drive in Dunedin.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food & Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. and maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com.
My bridge is all.
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final section, segment two of Freedom Works. And thank you so very much for being with us. I wanted to briefly talk about what Ayn Rand. Remember Ayn Rand, the famous objectivist? She wrote Atlas Shrugged. And, you know, her philosophy was very much a big thing in the 40s and 50s. Well, Tom Bowden, who is with the Ayn Rand Institute, had a piece about what Ayn Rand might think about Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, two espoused far-left liberals. In fact, Sanders considers himself a socialist. And so Bowden wrote a piece about all of this. He said, although Occupy Wall Street has faded from memory since police cleared out that Zuccotti Park in Manhattan 9 years ago, populist attacks on the finance industry are very much alive. He says Sanders, who's called for a moral and political war against billionaires, claims that the business model of Wall Street's a fraud. And meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren has built her reputation with calls for breaking up big banks and curtailing CEO pay and putting more execs in jail for corporate misdeeds. He says nowhere in the arena, however, does the finance industry receive a moral defense. For that, one must turn to a book, In Pursuit of Wealth, The Moral Case for Finance by Yaron Brook, who is the chairman of the Ayn Rand Institute. The Moral Case for Finance describes in detail what financiers actually do to get the profits that they generate. By channeling savings to the most productive businesses and creditworthy consumers, financiers, and the like, everybody gets involved. And he says, large profits are not a cause for shame, but a sign of virtue. So there you go, a little bit about that. And if you want to read more, go to the Ayn Rand website, AynRand.org, and look for Wall Street Needs a Moral Defense. Okay, there you go. Well, it is time for our top 10, and I think we got a good one. I'm going to do the tallest presidents in another show, but just because we're all about the State of the Union speech and the impeachment, I thought we would look at the tallest and shortest presidents. Now, Mike Bloomberg, if he becomes president, Ed, would probably be the shortest.
Yeah, he'd win the prize.
He might win the prize, but we're going to find out, because we have the top 10 shortest presidents, and when we get to number one, I want to see if you know your history, Ed. We'll find out if you know who it is. So here we go. Without further ado, these are the top 10 shortest presidents. Number 10. Now, there's a four-way tie for number 10. All of these presidents were 5'8" tall. Okay, these are the so this is actually 10, 9, 8, and 7. They're all the same. At 5'8", they are Ulysses Grant, Zachary Taylor, James Polk, and William Henry Harrison. They were all in the 19th century.
Hmm.
They were all 5'8". Okay, so that means that the next one, believe it or not, is number 6. So that's where we're doing. Number 6. Coming in at 5'7" John Quincy Adams.
And to be politically correct, we should call him vertically challenged.
He was vertically challenged.
President.
Yes, he was. And did you know that John Quincy Adams was the son of another president, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So here we go with number five. It's actually a tie, including John Quincy Adams' dad. John Adams, the second president of the United States, 5'7" tall. And William McKinley, he was one of the presidents that was assassinated. Mm. Did you know that he was assassinated?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was also 5'7" tall. So that leaves us, because it gets kind of confusing, with three spots left in the top 10. Mm. So this is going to be what amounts to the third shortest president. Roll the drum. And there's a tie for this. Another president that got assassinated, Martin Van Buren, 5'6" tall. Maybe these people that assassinate presidents wanted them taller. That's the only thing I can think of. And he is tied at 5'6" with Benjamin Harrison. Now, Benjamin Harrison also died in office, but he died of natural causes in office. Anyway, more information than you need to know, and I'm putting Ed to sleep. Okay, Ed, wake up, because now we're going to go to number one, Ed, and I want you to tell me first, who do you think? Who do you think was the shortest president? I'll give you a hint.
It's hard. Okay.
I'll give you a hint. It's one of the founding fathers.
Mm.
During Revolutionary War times.
I was going to say Washington. I don't know.
Okay. You want to guess George Washington?
I guess so.
Okay, roll the drum. Number one. George Washington was first in this country, but he was not the shortest.
Mm.
In fact, he was rather tall, as you will find out later.
Well, I never stood next to him. You did.
Oh, now that's a real cheap shot. And just for that, this is an unforgiving shot. The guy that wrote the Constitution was the shortest president.
Wow.
James Madison.
Wow.
You know how tall he was?
Mm.
5'4" tall.
Wow.
Now, that brings me to this. We got to find out. We need to Google how tall is Michael Bloomberg, because I'm wondering if he would be the shortest president. Is there a way you can, because we got a minute. I don't know. I mean to put you on the spot, Ed. Ed's doing the best he can to find out how tall Michael Bloomberg is. We got a little extra time. But James Madison, now I'm going to tell you.
You ready?
Yeah, please tell me, how tall is he?
He is 5'8".
Really?
Yeah.
Bloomberg?
Yes.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yes.
He doesn't look that tall.
Biden is 6 foot.
And Biden is 6 foot. Yeah, now Biden looks tall, but Bloomberg looks shorter than 5'8" to me.
Standing next to Trump, he comes up to his chin.
Does he?
Yeah.
Do they actually meet?
Well, they're standing together.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're not throwing down or anything,
right,
but they're there.
All right. Well, James Madison, let's give him credit. He was also the author of the Constitution, but the shortest of all the presidents, 5'4". Okay. By the way, I want you to stay tuned for a wonderful program coming up after the news, the Craft Beer Hour with Kenny and Bill. In the meantime, back Friday, remember, freedom works.